You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey everyone, this is Nick. I hope you're doing well today. We're here to talk today about An American Tale, Feifel Goes West, meaning we have done almost everything Don Bluth has ever created, thought of, or thought of. Though I don't know how much he actually had to do with this one. This is another weird musical sequel, I guess. And John Cleese was in it, which surprised me. So, I'm talking to you from yesterday, the far-off day of Wednesday. And on this coming weekend, we're having a big meeting with the myopia planners and the people who helped me do this show. We're talking about possibly some creative new things, like a listener request month, which we tried years ago, other themes. With that in mind, go to the Facebook page and, yeah, give us your thoughts. What do you like about the show this season? We've made some changes for those old timers. But yeah, what would make you excited to listen to Myopia more? Also, next month, Masters of the Universe, a Dolph Lundgren classic, I guess. Cineprov is riffing it, and I am not on that show. But if you're in the area, you should participate. You should come out, listen to it. It'll be good. Finally, I guess, if you're around, give us a 5-star review wherever you're listening to this. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, we're on Spotify now, all those good things. And if you don't like it, give us 4 stars, I guess. But we have a Patreon coming. ESO has received our first submission. I don't know when it's coming out, but you'll hear it too. It's a Zaction film with me and Zach talking London Has Fallen, which is a real shit show. Also, you know, enjoy. Thanks.
Hello, podcast fans. My name is Chris Jones, and I'm here to tell you about the Nerd Bliss podcast. Now, of all the geek-oriented podcasts out there, we are definitely one of them. Yes, we talk about Star Trek and Star Wars and cosplay and Marvel and DC and the usual. But as geeks, we embrace anyone with very specialized knowledge, like triathletes or improv comedians or musicians. So we try to bring them in and let them share their geekiness with you to help broaden some horizons, and maybe you'll learn something. Maybe we'll learn something. You can find our entire catalog at nerdblisspodcast.com on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play Music, Player FM, and we are now proud to be a part of the ESO Network. Once again, we are the Nerd Bliss Podcast. Thank you, and pod bless.
Welcome to Miami Defend Your Childhood. This week, I don't even know. We watched Blazing Saddles, the animated movie, as Daniel pointed out.
Lot less use of the N-word.
You just have to look between the lines, man. We watched American Tale, Feifel Goes West, parentheses, a Kennedy joint, or what was it? Kathleen Kennedy joint, starring Dom DeLuise. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Miami Defend Your Childhood, riffer on Cineprov, and on panel we have...
Matthew W. Quinn, author of the much scarier story, The Thing in the Woods.
Hello, this is Daniel, and be prepared for a lot of Jimmy Stewart impersonations.
And what do you do? Who do you write for?
Oh, you want me to actually plug something this week?
Please, always.
Sure. I contribute to popdose.com, and I am a frequent annoyance of Nick at his Cineprov shows.
We're recording this slightly in advance of when it releases. By the time this comes out, I want Daniel on Letterboxd so that next time you can refer people to your Letterboxd page.
All right.
This movie is interesting because... regular contributor now and again, Jamie Cotton had us do the first one, An American Tale, which is a very bleak existence where a bunch of Jewish mice are escaping the pogroms. And this is kind of the lighthearted antics as they move west, starring John Cleese, Dom DeLuise, John Lovitz.
Yep. Amy Irving, who once mattered.
So many of these people once mattered. And a rapidly desiccating Jamie Stewart.
Jamie Stewart?
I was going to say James, then I got real informal real
sure,
quick.
Sure. Well, heck, Mr. Spielberg, I'll be in your picture, but please don't put me in all the scenes with that tiger fella there. Hey. Oh, heck. Oh, gee whiz, you put me in all the scenes with that tiger fella. Well, I promised I'd do the picture, so, well.
You're going to have a training montage there. Yeah. You're going to make him fight with a pitchfork and kick that British cat's ass.
Do you think this tiger fellow can take over the building and loan?
You know, Mr. Hitchcock, you look a lot more Semitic than I'm used to.
Oh, heck. Gee whiz. I'm sharing a scene with a little tiny mouse.
You know, an actor my age doesn't find himself in such a convenient situation.
Well, it's not every day a fella finds himself in this situation here.
With a little tiny mouse.
And a cat
that's getting suffocated in boobs.
Right? That was disturbing. Little pussy poo.
Twice, get suffocated in boobs.
Oh, that's right. It's the John.
A beheaded anthropomorphic pair of giant tits just keeps nearly suffocating John Cleese.
And putting it in.
Right. I think it's a little kinky.
Oh my god, like a smothering fetish was developed. You know, it's so funny that we've talked about weird fetishizing of animals, like the Robin Hood from 1970.
Yeah.
But like, this is something like just a large woman crushing you to death in your monocle with her big boobs is just something that happens throughout this movie like four times as a punchline.
Go on.
Yeah, I mean, right?
Can I take a couple minutes right now?
Right.
And then the furry crowd apparently really likes Tanya, too.
Speaking of, I'm having some Dom DeLuise wheeze laughing throughout this. I apologize. Pollen is thicker than the air we breathe.
Okay, speaking of Dom DeLuise, are those some of the worst puns that have ever been committed to film?
A spy, a spy, a spy. I remember those. I quote this movie more than I realize, which is something.
Oh, I know. You've done the lazy eye before.
Do we give him a lazy eye?
Is this going to be a Jimmy Stewart impersonation podcast? All three of us have done that already.
As I said at the front, expect a lot of it.
Well, I know you would. I wasn't planning to do it myself, but
I can do it too, a little bit. I can do it on my own, which is Lil Brother.
Like, okay, now we sound a little bit like Herbert from Family Guy.
Well, there we go.
Da, 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 da. Hi there, newspaper boy.
Oh my god, your voice faded. It's as though your body rejected the impersonation from the beginning.
Well, speaking of pollen, that's what happens.
Well, maybe Herbert's body is ejecting his soul after 90-some years of being a pervert. So maybe that's what's happening.
All right. Here's the thing about this one. I would wager... well, I told Daniel this before, and I'm not going to get into an analysis or a love fest yet, but I saw both these movies when I was a kid. And as though we've gotten away from the model of really true defense, because people get really sad when we kick around their childhood too much. But I saw both of these movies when I was young. I must have watched this one five times as much as the original.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Me too.
And I don't know if it was just on TV, but it's definitely more fun of a watch.
It's more aimed at kids. I mean, the first one is really bleak, and this one is more, you know, cowboys and Indians and gunplay and all the stuff that young kids would respond to more at that point.
We have a lot of fans who listen to this for different reasons. Some people don't speak English, and they love my Midwest accent. But, I mean, for the most part, we have a lot of fun here. Matt is cynical. Daniel hates everything. Matt doesn't pay attention, and I try to make the joke-em-ups. But we're going to have two different, very, very different kind of talks on this one, I have a feeling, because I think we all kind of had fun watching this because it's a silly movie. That means Daniel hated it because it has no integrity. Matt and I laughed at the joke-em-ups.
There were joke-em-ups in this movie?
Oh, there's a good number of joke-em-ups.
The only time I laughed was John Cleese going, "I think I've told you about how I prefer not to be called pussy poos."
I mean, pussy poo is the grossest thing we could say on this show. But on top of that, I think the spider guy is a hilarious henchman.
The itsy bitsy spider got the mouse up in the web. The itsy bitsy spider bit off the mouse's head.
An anachronism, because I think this takes place in 1885, and that didn't exist back then.
Doesn't matter. Who cares? Like, I mean, no. I mean, you're right. This is closer to a Looney Tunes movie than Space Jam was, I'd say.
That's true. They include the same jokes about First Nationers that were back in the 30s and 40s.
Well, and I mean, there's a good chunk in the desert where they're almost doing like... I mean, that's literally the Looney Tune gag. At one point, Fievel crosses Tiger in the desert, and there's
you're a mirage.
And he goes, "You too," and they wave at each other.
Yeah, that could be something that could be really sad, and I think they try to play that for comedy.
They do. And I think mildly successfully as well.
I just remember in the first one, there was all those weird coincidences where, okay, if you take one step to the left, you're reunited with your family. Stop being lazy.
Well, I mean, and the first one is really a... I almost said it in American.
Heartbreaking.
Well, no, it is, but it's specifically like... Once Upon a Time in America.
Yeah. Oh, let's not reference great movies.
I don't know. The first one might be up there.
What was that Tom Servo rule, was it?
Yeah, no, yeah, it
never
is.
Never reference a good movie in the middle of your crappy movie.
Right, but they don't reference it directly. But like the first one is almost a Simpsons episode version of Once Upon a Time in America or Godfather Part Two. Flashbacks of Godfather Two.
Oh, can you just picture if in the first one there was like a young mouse who got shot and just went, "Fievel, I slipped,"
or "That's a nice chunk of the cheese." As the god mouse is walking around, just like, "Pray for my son. He's like, no. And that's a nice chunk of the cheese."
And then there's that whole bit where Fievel and his friends, you know, trick a police officer into having sex with an underage girl and take a picture of him.
I mean, that's funny.
Well, they have the Fievel's Italian friend Tony from the first movie. Apparently, he's in this one, in the background somewhere. Yeah. Make him like the Godfather mouse, you know.
"On the day of my daughter's wedding, I'm going to make those dudes suffer."
I remember Tony. Wasn't he the one that he's like, "Oh, I'm your friend. Oh, wait, there's a woman over there. Bye."
Yeah. I mean, he's a cartoon. He's a newsie. I mean, speaking of movies from this era, newsies.
Future episode?
Oh, my God. Yes. With
Christian Bale.
Christian Bale. Thank you. I mean, you knew the one guy who I was thinking of.
He apparently hates it when you bring up the fact he was a newsies.
How about the fact that he was Batman?
How about the fact he was Batman, you mean?
You almost have to move the microphone down here to your throat. God, I can't even do it.
I've got laryngitis now.
I'm Batman.
I think that was less Batman and more Bill Hicks just then.
You know, the Jews are in charge of the media, and... sorry, Bill Hicks. Oh. Hey, at least I didn't make a gay joke, because everyone remembers him for being arrested for free speech. They forget the gay jokes and the anti-Semite shit.
Who's Bill Hicks?
Don't.
Oh, honey.
Oh, for a second, I thought you were talking about Corporal Hicks from Aliens.
No. Bill Hicks is a stand-up.
He was a stand-up comedian.
60s, 70s, and...
Later than that, he was like...
50s?
Late 80s, early 90s.
Well, no, but he was arrested in the 70s, I think.
No, that was... Lenny Bruce.
Lenny Bruce, you're right. Okay.
Is Lenny Bruce not afraid?
Lenny Bruce is not afraid. In fact, the last few years of his life, he would just quote his court testimony for being arrested for swearing. Yeah. Regardless, these are just assholes.
Have we even gotten into the plot yet of this
movie?
That's
what I was trying to toss to you.
All right.
Give me the plot.
Okay, the plot is that this family is somewhere in New York after their harrowing adventure in the first film.
Yeah.
And Fievel somehow has developed an obsession with the Old West. So after a cat attack that destroys their home, they find this random puppet that's giving away free tickets to this town called Green River. So Fievel and his family go, and Fievel gets separated from them again. And he finds out that the ringleader of this whole plan is a guy named Catterwahl, Catterwahl. It's as funny as it sounds, trust me.
Yeah.
And he wants to use, and he eventually has a plan to kill them with a better mousetrap. Again, these are actual quotes from
building
the movie.
A better mousetrap.
Yeah, that whole thing. It's a lot classier when it comes from John Cleese. But anyway, Fievel tries to recruit his old friend Tiger and the legendary sheriff dog Wiley Burp to stop Catterwahl.
So, as a historian, I'm going to interject 2 points. First of all, that this really is the kind of thing that happened, obviously, that people were sold on going to the Old West. Everyone from African Americans, like, you know, the freedmen to go out west to found their own colony, to, you know, New York immigrants, people specifically in this case of Eastern European descent.
Oh my God, is this the animated version of Heaven's Gate?
Fuck you.
Is there a reverse servo rule? You're referencing a really bad movie and a mediocre one?
Yeah.
I like Heaven's Gate. It took a while, but I like that movie now.
And the whole cult leader thing, really compelling stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. No, but also... The dime novels, the idea that these heroes out west existed. I mean, if you've a movie that I think really is fantastic, it's slow, but it's wonderful. The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford is true. Like, by this point, the great Western outlaw hunters were actually like comic book heroes of these dime novel stories. And that's what Feivel understands of the Old West, that like Wiley Burp, which is a dog played by a rapidly passing away Jimmy Stewart. I mean,
you're not wrong. That's no, that's the
point.
I mean, but the thing is, you corrected me earlier. It's Unicron.
Yes,
Unicron is a dying Orson Welles, but he's giving it his all. Like Jimmy Stewart here sounds like a deflating balloon. Oh, you showed up, huh? Is it time for my line, Mr. Neville? No, you are way past him.
Well, I think that might be the point. He is a dying legend. I mean, one man sunsets, another sunrise.
Matt, I'm going to give you this before Daniel fucks, like, takes a shit all over you. But only because... That's the point. He's passing it on to a next generation. Unfortunately, if you're Jimmy Stewart, Dom DeLuise isn't going to succeed you as one of the greatest actors of all time.
If that happened, that would be hilarious.
I was just thinking of all the other people who could have done this instead of Jimmy Stewart, like getting Charles Bronson from Once Upon a Time in the West to do it, or Clint Eastwood.
That's what I was thinking of. If Clint Eastwood had been like, if Tiger had been his number two, and it would have been like, you know what? I'll be your sheriff.
Your tomfoolery doesn't amuse me, Cat.
I didn't teach him that.
He's getting late at the end. He's like, "Well, he put on a condom. I didn't teach him that one."
Well, doesn't he realize that all you need to do is trick a woman to go into the bushes without her bathrobe?
I could pull down the moon for you, but unfortunately, it's made out of.
Buffalo gal, won't you come out tonight? Come out tonight.
All right, we're done. We're done for the time being. All right, so something we should talk about. Tanya, the younger sister, is obsessed with being a singer.
I looked this up, and this was just a fun piece of trivia. It's Blossom from the it's Blossom from the Powerpuff Girls.
Oh, good. It's what's her name? Star. Tara Strong.
No, not Tara Strong. Someone else, but you're in the ballpark.
Yeah, I love Tara Strong. She's also Harley Quinn.
Yeah, they built up Tanya a lot more in this movie than in the other movie.
Well, they build her up just so that they can have songs for this to be a soundtrack. And it's weird because there's like, what, 3 songs overall in this musical?
Yeah. I will say, though, there's a levity there. I mean... Albeit for me, comparing it to some of the movies we do, this one wraps up nice and tight really quick. And I appreciate that because if it really is a Looney Tunes movie, which it kind of is, it's nice that it's short. Like, watching this, I mean, these guys are my regulars. I love them to death. I can hear their critiques as they go.
Well, I brought my notes.
As did I.
Oh.
So let's go into... the first thing that I noticed, this film literally opens with a shot of John Ford's Monument Valley.
Which, it does.
For that young audience, who would understand that? And for that old audience, wouldn't they just roll their eyes?
Well, maybe it's a parental bonus.
I will say, Matt, you're right. This is the Shrek effect that I hate. I mean, even though this is a decade before Shrek. Mm-hmm. But I will say, it's also Wile E. Coyote's America. right? Like, yeah. I mean, I've been to this area. This is Monument Valley. These are like the giant bluffs on top of these like incredible buttes, which is butt with an E.
Still, I would have forgiven that if there wasn't a scene later where the First Nationers confuse Tiger with Monument Valley.
Right. I mean, we can get to that cartoon later.
Oh, boy.
There's a little bit more racism in the weird way in this one, where Papa Mouskovitz goes, you know, Tiger's one of the good ones. And you're just like, this
whoa. And that's one
is
of
it
the
racist if you're a prey animal and the entire species is out to eat you?
Yes. Because the whole animal metaphor is just a metaphor, right? It's like saying like...
That's why The Jewish people were represented by mice because they were, you know, the downtrodden that were living in the slums of New York.
Read comic book Mouse.
Ooh, there you go.
I'm sure sheep hate us.
I don't recall any sheep characters in this movie.
What are you talking about?
I'm saying sheep and cows and pigs, I'm sure hate us. We eat them.
That assumes that they're intelligent enough to understand. Hippies.
Bah. Beep, beep,
Bob
by machine.
Ram, you. But I mean, here's the thing at the end of the day. There's a lot of weird race stuff, which the first one alluded to, and I'm going to agree with Matt in some ways here. It's not that it's inherently flawed. It's just that it's weird to toss it in and not bring it to fruition.
Yeah.
Because Papa Mouskovitz doesn't like learn anything at the end about being racist about the cat.
The parents disappear after the first act, practically.
They do. I mean, and like that's the thing. Like that's the thing that otherwise Spielberg's actually kind of good at, because he considering that he's might be most successful blockbuster commercial director of all time.
Just trust. $10 billion in gross totals.
Unadjusted for inflation, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good at that race stuff. But at the end of the day, this doesn't go very far because, like, yeah, Papa Mouskovitz is uncomfortable with cats, but that's never resolved by saying there's a good one or a bad one. He just says, but Tiger's okay.
Tiger's one of the good ones. Well,
right. In the later scenes, they're building when Fievel is trying to warn them, having overheard what Catterwall is doing. He's like, Fievel, in the West, cats are good. I mean, Papa Mouskovitz should know better. I can imagine Fievel being dumb enough to fall for that because he's so obsessed with the Old West, but Papa Mouskovitz is a guy who survived pogroms. He should be a little smarter than that.
He should be. He's not. But it's interesting because, Matt, you and I know this as graduates of... You have a master's. I'm almost a PhD. There is that story that they tell about the Old West where there's like... Black people were equal and white people and Native Americans, and like that image is falling apart very quickly. So it's interesting that that's what they pulled together in 1991, 27 years ago.
Well, all the Western cliches by this point were old hat, which I know is kind of a Western pun, but the only way you could get that across was for kids, so they just decided to recycle them rather than build on them, because at the time, the biggest box office bomb of all time was a revisionist Western.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Is that that one movie you were talking about?
Heaven's Gate, yes.
Yeah, Heaven's Gate. Okay. I mean, here's the thing at the end of the day. The joy of this movie is not the setting, which is unfortunate because that's what makes it a Don Bluth movie, and this is a sequel.
I did like the fact that there was actual gunplay in the movie, though.
Yeah, I mean, so...
With that huge cannon that John Cleese is using at the end.
Which is like...
He's compensating for something.
Yeah. I'm thinking, instead of if you give a mouse a cookie, how about if you give a cat a handgun?
Yeah, if you give a cat a Magnum, yeah. He's going to try to take over the Old West.
I know what you're thinking, Fievel. Did I fire 6 shots or only 5?
I mean, he's going to say, instead of Clint Eastwood, that's what it is. It's a Dirty Harry gun. It's like, yeah. It's a Magnum so big that Fievel's running up and down the barrel to spin it at the end.
Yep.
Let's advance. So the movie starts in old New York. Like it's a cliche and everything bad.
It starts with Fievel in that imaginary shootout with the cats and Wiley Burp and him. They don't actually show any of the cats dying, but they defeat them.
They shoot the guns out of their hands.
Yeah, they shoot
that's
the guns.
What it is.
Yeah, and in a pure panic. Again, it's as a Belgian man, one of your Belgians. I read a lot of Lucky Luke, and that's kind of what it is. People are never shot dead because they need to show up for another episode in case. Mm-hmm. But you shoot the guns out of their hands, you shoot the hats off their head, and they're so impressed with your gunplay, they surrender. But it turns out they're just still shitty in Brooklyn, right? They're living in this kind of lofted apartment thing.
Yeah, and people are throwing food at Tanya as she tries to sing.
Somewhere out there.
She does.
Which is, I get, because I remember Somewhere Out There being everywhere, and fuck that song, honestly. but anyway, please.
I'm saying, I remember that song, I don't like my heartstrings being pulled, and that song could do it, so I didn't like listening to it, but it was on a lot.
Well, but here's the thing for me. In the context, it's a masterpiece.
Oh, in context, it was great. It's the one scene I remember definitively from the first one.
On its own, when they played it on V98.5 all the time.
Well, the radio version, the singing is better, and a couple little kids with cracky voices.
I prefer the kids with cracky voices because then it's more authentic, especially for the setting.
This is so Disney, though, isn't it? Because A Whole New World. What's the one from Little Mermaid? Effectively, they...
Part of Your World?
Yes. They overdub everything, and so there's like radio versions of things with like these professional actors and actresses out and replaced with these really like R&B singers, and that was kind of the 90s from Disney.
Yeah. Well, I hated when the Prince of Egypt did that R&B cover of When You Believe that of what, Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston.
Stay tuned for that movie.
I remember liking that movie. It's just that version of the song is nowhere near as good as the original.
I'm not sighing because of the movie. I'm sighing because that movie entered the lexicon for all the wrong reasons. What it should have been was a decent movie that, like, not unlike, what, Passion of the Christ? Is the kind of thing you watch in Sunday school and with like religious with religious intention, because it's like it's a well done religious film, and unlike Ten Commandments, it doesn't take 12 hours to watch, right? But
I'm just picturing a Sunday school watching Passion of the Christ and all the kids getting traumatized for life
and the parents drinking wine in the back. I was Catholic. It's a lot of wine. But I mean, but my point is,
it's
like
a sacrament.
It's sacrilegious. The blood. It's sacrilegious. But I mean, the thing I'm but what I mean is, when you make that a radio single, it's weird, right? Like nothing in here is pretending to be a Christmas or a Sunday song, right? It turns into the Great Mouse Detective kind of for a bit, which is weird. We have a burlesque show.
Well, I thought that was just more Madeline Kahn scene in Blazing Saddles.
The dastardly Catterwall becomes entranced by Tanya's music and starts crying and tries to make her a saloon girl.
Yeah.
Which okay. He does a really good job of it, too.
The fact you just said that's disturbing in and of itself.
Hey, I agree, man. Like, child pornography is mouse, like, right? but we should get into this just a smidge more. After a cat attack...
Well, before that, we also see Tiger breaking up with his girlfriend.
Miss Kitty.
That's what I was getting into. Go ahead. Catch us up to the train.
Okay, well, she's leaving because she wants a cat who's more like a dog. And I feel like I lost a bet watching her scenes because I could have sworn that was Bernadette Peters, but then I remembered we're not watching Rita and Runt, we're watching Five Will Goes West, and it's Amy Irving.
It should have been what's her name? Catwoman.
Eartha Kitt. Eartha Kitt.
Yeah, oh my god, that would have been great. Just like, you need to be more like a cat.
Oh my god, you're right. That would have been amazing.
She was doing a Madeline Kahn from Blazing Saddles, which fine, whatever. Yeah. I like her. But
less penis jokes.
But do anything with it other than do an impersonation, right? Like, because you're already going to kind of be Madeline Kahn, tired of playing the game, right? You're doing it. Do something else. Do anything else, because you're going to end up being her anyway.
I just hated all the... Well, I hated the fact that Dom DeLuise got so much screen time, because he really was the worst representative of American comedy, wasn't he?
Tiger's voice is really kind of annoying.
Yeah, that's Dom DeLuise.
I mean, we just did Secret of NIMH not long ago.
Oh yeah, and he was the
crow.
Yeah, he was the crow.
But he's supposed to be annoying,
right? And that's why he's best. Make him like an auxiliary character where he's just a punchline, right?
Or hell, just if you're ripping off Blazing Saddles, just do his character in Blazing Saddles all over again.
I'm sorry, I'm the Black Sheriff.
He can just go up to like the other cats and go wrong.
Anyway, so like Daniel said, or a puppet mouse played by John Cleese, who's actually Cat Arwal, who's a dapper Englishman. They play him as such. He's not pretending to be an American.
He tries so well. This is what was great about that, because you can tell it's the Cleesean making fun of America.
So for all of you all, I mean. Y'all. You can't lower your jaw as tall as he does, because he's taller than you.
Well, not you, Nick, but
no. As Thomas would remind me, though, he's taller than I am, but I have all my hair, so fuck him. But no, like he kind of swallows the apostrophes. It was like y'all.
Oh yeah, that was.
But the whole notion is he's selling. These passes to the cat to go to the mice to go west, mm-hmm. where all the cats are, for reasons to make mouse burgers.
They want to exploit the mice for labor to build a town for them, and they're going to kill and eat all of them.
Right.
So this is really an exploration of the Leninist trends that were slowly building up in the late 19th and early 20th century.
Cats are extracting surplus value from the mice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very anti-anything movie.
He even says, first we'll exploit their labor.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's very Marxist.
Yeah, Cat Arwal is very entertaining as a villain. He's very smart. He's a very advanced vocabulary. He is incredibly supercilious. And I mean, the first movie, the villain is just a non-entity. He's a cat pretending to be a mouse selling protection rackets or something like that. Cat Arwal is an actual character, and he is really entertaining.
No,
well, if you get John Cleese, you got to get him to actually do stuff.
I agree. I mean, Matt's right. This is actually a character villain, and he is a villain. So when they get to Green River?
Yeah, Green River.
Go ahead.
I think the more villain was the tarantula that John Lovitz plays.
Oh my God, this tarantula is bearded.
Chula do this and Chula do that.
He has the beard and mustache of what's the cat? Oh my God, I just had it.
Dragon?
No. It's the
Sam
mouse.
Elliott?
No. It's the mouse from Chippendale's Rescue Rangers. It's Monterey Jack.
Monterey
Jack has that weird mustache and furry chin. He's just like, we have to get the cats and the cheese. Whatever. But he's effectively, like, they're playing cards at one point, and he's cheating because he has like 12 sets of aces. And
oh yeah, that what was the line he did? It's like, I'll take your hand.
Well, I got 7 more.
Don't laugh at that. That was not a good joke.
You really need to have a YouTube channel for mimicking stuff, Daniel, because you are really good at it.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. Well, you're better than me, and I can do it pretty well sometimes.
Well, to also quote this movie, thanks for your adulation.
Adulation. A lot of jaw acting. It's a Pierce Brosnan level of jaw acting.
So, well, Five will get how does he get separated from his family?
They throw
again?
Him off the train to make it look like an accident.
Well, he ends up in that cabin where Cat Arwal is talking about the master plan, and he tries to eat the conductor, but then the conductor, like, gets replaced by that puppet that he was using earlier. How does that happen again?
I can't even remember.
Effectively, everyone's asleep and he's looking for something. I forget what he's looking for.
And he runs into the puppet and
he's like, you were the one who convinced us to go. I'm Five, blah, 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 blah. And then they look down and they hear the cats and everything.
Would you prefer the crouton or the entire Caesar salad?
There's a lot of weird food.
That was more Joker than John Cleese. My apologies.
I mean, you're edging more and more to Mark Hamill, but I'm going to let it happen. where do you want to go? I mean, from here, like, Fievel gets thrown overboard. He survives. And at the end of the day, everyone ends up in Green River. They're super sad. Fievel ends up trying to walk through the desert.
Before this, there's that scene where Tiger is trying to get to the train, and he's being chased the entire way by dogs. There's that whole scene where he ends up on the rooftop, and then he ends up accidentally opening all those dog cages. And then the single worst pun I've ever seen in a movie in a while, when he gets underwater, and then that fish starts barking at him and just goes, "Dog fish." So they both end up, he somehow ends up on the right train, and then he falls overboard accidentally.
You will.
And he gets captured by the Indian mice who are going to eat him until they somehow start believing he's one of their gods.
Because he is shaped like Monument Valley.
Daniel, you would know this, but I wouldn't. Because I wouldn't. Sue Snell from Carrie, the head bully. The one who pushes Carrie?
Oh, yeah. Isn't that Amy Irving?
Yeah, she's the one who plays Kitty.
The only thing I could remember Amy Irving from offhand was she was Michael Douglas's wife in Traffic.
That's exactly right. God, you're good at this shit. That's why I'm not the host, usually. But yeah, so like at this point, they get through the desert, kind of. Tiger is there. Tiger is Tiger. Who's Tiger? Who's Tiger? Mm-hmm. He is trying to follow Miss Kitty.
Yep.
And when he follows Miss Kitty, he falls off the stagecoach. Like, Dom DeLuise is in a different kind of movie. He's literally in a Looney Tunes movie.
Yeah. As if, in case you doubted, the dancing buffalo bones will convince you of that.
Is it Looney Tunes? We're about to say, oh, he's in A Man Called Horse. I want to have him initiated the tribe by having a bunch of giant hooks shoved into his pecs.
Better movie.
And you're not that far off. I mean, honestly, like he's about to be beaten and cooked to death. And then they realize that in this particular pose, he looks like a butte. And so they start worshiping him like
a god. The John Ford butte.
I mean, you're wrong. You're not wrong. Like, it's crazy. Like, the problem is, like, and we won't talk about yet if we like this movie or not, but the movie is 75 minutes. The first hour of this is dicking around.
Pretty much.
And then, please.
Yeah, I was about to say, it gets fun toward the end when Wiley Burp starts trying to train Tiger to be the next badass, and that part's really funny.
If you edited this down to it's already 75 minutes, but if it was like two episodes of DuckTales, this is a really tight comedy. Like, there is some funny bits, and then there's some emotional bits, but the emotional bits are referencing the first movie.
They had a Fievel's American Tales television show. This could be like the 2-hour introductory episode where they leave New York and go out west.
They also have two sequels to this movie.
Apparently make the claim that this was all a dream.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Two direct-to-video sequels, they kind of drop a line in there somewhere that, you know, I had the best dream. I went out west and I was a cowboy. But they're still all in New York.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, there's like Fievel takes Manhattan, and then Fievel invests in the Trump Corporation or whatever the next two are.
And Fievel, there's a very special episode of American Tale where Fievel meets a tribe of Native American mice and has like a blue screen of death about how bad the Indians were treated.
I mean, honestly, it sounds more and more the way you describe it, like something like Tintin, where it's just like, and now we're going to investigate how weird this got. Yeah, but it's the next two are Fievel, American Tale, The Treasure of Manhattan Island, and then an American Tale, The Mystery of the Night Monster, because apparently he meets Scooby-Doo.
Well, the treasure of Manhattan Island, I think, is one of the Indians, and they have it, the character's language is actually Lene Lenape in Indian language, and and Night Monster actually meet the mouse version of Nellie Bly, the journalist.
Wikipedia or TV Tropes?
Wikipedia.
All right. I didn't even know these things existed, so...
You're better off for that.
I mean, to be fair, I was looking at voodoo codes and that kind of shit, and there's apparently 12 Land Before Time movies.
Oh, good Lord.
Sad. So sad.
I remember being at the YMCA, like, kids whatever area, and, like, watching the fourth one. It was just on, and no one was watching it, you know? And there was just song after song after song, and I'm just like...
Speaking of song after song after song in this movie, we get Tanya singing Somewhere Out There and getting cut off at the beginning. Then it goes on for 20 minutes and we get this other random song on the train. So was this always supposed to be a musical, or did they just decide, well, it's only running an hour, we better pad it out?
So, you know how sometimes there you are and you think something is happening, but you could never be sure? Daniel confirmed that for me today, because at one point they're playing Rawhide, and it's the Blues Brothers version. And I was like, this sounds exactly like the Blues Brothers song. And I know that they didn't like play pre-recorded songs. They sang their own versions. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have played the Blues Brothers version in a 1991.
They did. Well, they did.
Well, they reused at one point music from The Land Before Time. So if Steven Spielberg had some kind of ownership in it, I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't even know if he did. It's John Landis.
But well, Steven Spielberg was in the Blues Brothers movie.
He was. So, you know what? Fuck it. I have no answer. I don't have answers for you. I just know that when he goes, Rawhide, I was like, that's John Belushi. That's 100% John Belushi.
I like the visual gag of he's rolling in a tumbleweed like it's a hamster wheel.
It makes no sense, though. It was just there to make a Blues Brothers joke that nobody would have got.
To me, Matt, you're right. This is where this movie becomes a comedy in a way that I love. I watched this movie probably five times as much as the original.
Yeah, the original I gave a 7.5 on my blog. This one I gave you a 6.5. This one I think is a little more entertaining, but is also so derivative, it's kind of annoying.
If I was teaching this era, I would watch, I would teach The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford, yeah, because it's a good explanation of the era. If I'm a kid and I'm watching this, this is the movie I'd rather watch. This one's fun. It's funny. What I probably watched was Blazing Saddles because it's dirty and I didn't understand why it was dirty.
I just remember The Outlaw Josie Wales. That's my dad's favorite Western.
That's a good one.
I mean, if I was teaching a old West, like teaching this era using film, I'd probably teach Josie Wales because you have the Civil War, you have the Comanches.
That's a masterpiece. I'm not going to argue with you. Like the one that... My dad is interesting with movies because he doesn't listen to it, but I'll explain this to you. He saw Dr. No when it opened. He saw the first five Connery movies when they opened. And yet, when I was 11 and GoldenEye opened and I wanted to see a Bond movie, he didn't mention a damn thing. He didn't. And so I was at my buddy Craig's house and we watched a bunch of them. And he didn't say anything. It wasn't until I was older that he was like, I love those movies. Because he's like, I don't want to show you things that I loved when you were a kid, because I don't want to spoil you on the things that I enjoyed, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like if nowadays parents are reading their kids Harry Potter, there's that rebellious phase where that means automatically kids are going to hate them.
Yep.
And so like, it wasn't until I was 14 that I watched with him Apocalypse Now, or, speaking of the genre, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Ah.
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which is 9.5 million hours long.
Why couldn't they get Ennio Morricone to write the score to this one?
That was what you needed. Like, because when I watched The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, it's a masterpiece. And I sat for 3 hours and watched The Civil War. I watched all of it because it is a masterpiece. Morricone is a brilliant idea, as opposed to Chuck DeLuise or whoever did the score.
James Horner, actually.
No kidding!
Yeah.
Who's actually not bad.
Well, I mean, he was partially responsible for My Heart Will Go On, so that's debatable.
He made money.
Now, the bad does not wash out the good, and the good does not wash out the bad.
The new Clorox ad?
Stannis Baratheon from Game of Thrones.
Oh, there you go.
Who was my Facebook photo for a while.
That's funny. You are quicker than you realize.
Thank you.
At the end of the movie, it all wraps up because Tanya wants to sing, and Kitty hears her sing. And
no, it's Catterwall that hears her sing, and they get Linda Ronstadt back to do that one song.
Well, they sing Stand By Your Man or whatever it is.
I forget what it was. It's like Dream Your Dreams or something.
Are you talking about the one where Catterwall hears her sing? Because in that one, he's absolutely entranced, the point he starts crying. And then Tanya sings a song in the bar, and all it's like is
It's the same joke that Blazing Saddles
it's this
made.
Crazy musical number with all these cats dancing everywhere and stuff. It's actually pretty entertaining.
Well, yeah. John Cleese, you know, would rehearse the cats weekly just to prepare them for this moment.
I just got it.
You know what this was? This was the new version of Confuse a Cat.
Fuck you. You're out.
Does it involve a laser pointer?
You never saw Monty Python, did you?
I saw Holy Grail.
The TV show.
No.
Okay.
I think I saw the blackmail skit because I had some VHS tapes of old episodes I watched once.
Yeah, that's a good one. Or the parrot.
It's an ex-parrot.
That's another one. It will end up on Netflix in like the next 6 months. They bought them all. Yeah.
Well, that would explain a lot. Just John Cleese going to the cats, go, "You all need to be confused.
I am the head of the cats." If he had a lady cat next to him the whole time going, "You know, you're a little bit overzealous." And he goes, "I am not overzealous. There could be reviewers anywhere."
Well, he has Miss Kitty.
"I don't like it when you call me Pussy Poo."
"Are you actually going to put those plans together today?" "Yes, dear. I'm doing it, dear.
I'm going to kill all the mice for you, dear." At the end of the day, they're building a better mousetrap to crush all the mice into mouse burgers.
All at once, because it's supposed to be the unveiling of the town, a literal red ribbon cutting ceremony. And then, what happens? Wiley Burp had been training Tiger in the desert.
Yeah, and Tiger turns into a badass. With fighting other cats with a pitchfork.
I will say, to Matt's point, though, he is the kind of badass that Dom DeLuise would turn into. He's not really a badass. It's almost better than if they had made him a true Rambo cat, right?
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, like he it's very tongue in cheek at least.
Well, that training montage was so weird because it's like, I just felt bad for Jimmy Stewart because it's like he's already cemented his status. They get him out of retirement to do one last movie, and he has to share Dom DeLuise's shtick.
It's very shticky, but at the same time, who cares, man? Like, I get your sympathy for an actor, but it's not like anyone was asking him to do anything else.
Because he didn't want to. I mean, he said he was out.
So you drive a truck of money up to his house and he does it. Like,
he sits on a throne of wads of bills wrapped up, like you see, and they open the suitcases.
I mean, like, they drive a dump truck of cash to his house. He's fine with it.
"Well, can you let me read my poetry for John Carson again?"
Sure, why not? "All right, Jimmy, we'll tell you what. What about David Letterman? Because Johnny died 12 years ago."
Oh, gee whiz, I don't know. That guy, there's a little tooth gap. Kind of just doesn't do it for me there."
"It's too good, man. I was going to have a response, but..." I'm Conan O'Brien, man. Like, could you do anything for me? Like, I'm the hugest fan. Like, you remember when you nearly killed yourself on Christmas?"
"Oh, heck, kid. You just need to take some of those downers and calm yourself down."
"Fucking A, dude, man. It's so good." "You know, I'm sorry. Just, you know, like, you know, I wish you'd come on my show because I'm, you know..."
Hell no.
"I just want to buy another car, Mr. Stewart, you know?"
"I mean, you're right." I wouldn't show up on Leno either, but, you know, "Mr. Leno, if you're out there and you're..." I can drive a car, kind of.
Yeah. He might know stick.
Leno knows more about cars than he does about being on TV.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, how do you want to end this? Like, well, at the end of the day, Tanya can sing. The cats fall in love with her. She convinces the mice to not be on the mousetrap.
And then there's a bit where, well, first off, the final shootout isn't really a shootout. It's done mostly with slingshots, which means you get that dick joke when Tiger's holding up that slingshot and then
it goes limp. After a six shooter, which is like erect.
Yeah. And then what happens? John Cleese has that huge magnum for a while.
"Give him the lady," which comes to nothing.
Yeah. No, you're right. Well, it was just that visual gag for Tiger to try it, and then they turn him into a Looney Tune. Well,
I thought the lazy eye, at one point, the cats had encircled them. They turn on the lazy eye, and it scares them all away.
I mean, you're not wrong. I just, all of it is gags. It's gags and gags and gags, and I just... Here's the thing I will disagree on Daniel on. Daniel, I know his rule. Even a kid's movie is not a kid's movie. It can have simpler morals and no profanity, but it should still be a movie. This really wants to be a kid's movie, and I think this one, this is a Shrek debate we will have in probably sooner than we want to.
But we're all getting old.
That movie is 17 years old.
Yep.
But sure is. Here's the thing. This should have gone sillier. Because if it was sillier, you could just say, it is a cartoon, it's ridiculous, but it keeps trying to pull at those heartstrings. Like, the somewhere out there where she's being thrown at tomatoes, I thought was a good entry point, because you're just like, f*** this old movie.
The ending?
That's where they try to pull it back to emotional again.
And it actually works for that one bit.
Although the bad CGI in that scene is just bad.
CGI
when the camera like pulls out over the vast desert and it's all obviously a computer graphic
that was hand drawn, buddy.
Yeah, that was not CGI.
But I do get what you're saying. It looks void.
Yeah.
It looks poorly constructed.
I mean, I don't think they would have had the money to do actual CGI for 1991. I mean,
yeah, that's it's less than 3 years after Beauty and the Beast. Or no, it's no, 2 years before Beauty and the Beast.
Actually, I think it was might have been released the same weekend.
Well, The Great Mouse Detective had CGI in the clock tower scenes.
That was still Disney money, though.
But did it cost that? The Great Mouse Detective cost that much?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it lost money. But regardless,
so the day is saved, and then we get the shot of Jimmy Stewart walking into the sunset and Five Will following him, and then there's that end monologue with him, which is, you know, the last thing he'd ever do. And it's classy. I think it's classy.
Do you have it in front of you?
What he actually says?
Yeah.
Not exactly, but it's that whole, well, maybe not, but maybe a real hero is the last man to know about it.
Yeah.
501 man's dusk is another man's dawn. And stuff like that. But in context, it's great because Jimmy Stewart can really milk that stuff. I mean, he was in all those John Ford movies in the 60s.
Well, and the movie ties up by like this heroic... I don't know. This, in some ways, is another version of the American Dream, but it's a nice... Well, I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I wish it picked a tone.
Well, it's too classic focused, too. I mean, at the time, everybody was more focused on, you know, Sam Peckinpah's point about how the Old West was the death of the American Dream.
Yeah, it's very Turner. I don't know. I like this movie. Well, let's go around the horn. Matt, what was your final thought?
Well, in some respects, I thought it was an improvement on the original. Like, it's more entertaining, and I like Catterwall as a villain better, but so much of it is just rehashing the first movie, and it's not being very creative, and that's just sad, because it's produced by Steven Spielberg, who's one of the greatest directors and filmmakers of all time.
Do you have your score?
I had 6.5 out of 10. I gave the original a 7.5 out of 10.
Mm. Perfect. Suddy.
I think it's fine for kids. I mean, if you need to distract them for like an afternoon, just plop them down in front of this and it'll probably do the trick. I don't know, though. Looking back on it now, a lot of it's just, it's too old hat. It was too obsessed with the Old West ideas and the Old West spoofs that people like Mel Brooks had already done.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was really breaking any new ground. And they had such a great cast, but outside of a few moments, they really underutilized them. I mean, you don't get somebody like Jimmy Stewart just to be the straight man for Dom DeLuise.
Yeah.
But they did it.
I know they did it, and those scenes were so, like, just wrong.
I will say a few things. First of all, the point that I think Daniel and I are stuck on is it's a mess thematically and directorially. It was directed by two guys, Simon Wells and Phil Neblink.
Oh, the classic film Nemblink.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure he's a perfectly nice man.
Well, Wells, you know, and try not to bite too hard in the microphone, but according to IMDb, the four films he's known best for are The Time Machine, that live action, the live one.
Oh, the one with Guy Pearce in it?
Yeah.
Ooh.
The Prince of Egypt, Flushed Away, where he was in the art department.
I thought that was an Aardman thing.
He was in the art department.
Ah.
and Spirit, Stallion of blah, 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 blah.
Oh, Cimarron.
Oh.
He was also in the art department there.
Oh, boy.
And Phil was in the animation department for all of the following four. A Romeo and Juliet film in 2006 involving fish that no one ever saw ever.
That doesn't exist.
Casper, the one we will probably do on this show with Christina Ricci.
Ah.
The Fox and the Hound, along with Don Bluth, which is why they both left together, and The Black Cauldron, which they both did together, and they both... He, in fact... That came out in 85, the same year as American Tail.
Oh,
because
yeah,
they started it together and Don Bluth left to do American Tail.
And then American Tail outgrosses Black Cauldron, and then Disney starts pooping its pampers.
Which is why Phil Nemblick ends up with him later on. Because they worked together for about 10 weeks and they're like, we need someone to know his style. Because Don Bluth had nothing to do with this movie.
Yeah.
Tonally, it's... It's one of my teenage students driving a stick shift and not knowing what a clutch is. It's jerky, it's weird, but to Matt's point, as a kid, I watched this much more than the original and thought it was hilarious. I think it's much more comedic and much more rewatchable than the first one, except for me as a jaded adult. The first one is about pogroms. The second one is about the Old West, and it has jokes in it. I don't think they're as good as, say, Simpsons at this era. 92, 93, 94 Simpsons had much better jokes. Speaking of, that's where Conan was at the time.
I know.
The thing is, though, it's a better animated movie, I think, in a lot of ways. Your thing is it a good movie? It doesn't matter if it's for kids or not. I think this is a better kids movie because it breaks the difference. It's funny. But unlike Shrek, it's not all shit jokes. There's a masturbation joke, for Christ's sake, in Shrek.
Yep.
Where he's, and a cross-dressing joke with Pinocchio.
There's drug jokes in this movie. I mean, they make that joke about the boss hitting the catnip again.
He is. But, I mean, I don't know. I think at the end of the day, I think this is a more fun movie. I don't know. Fun is a hard thing to quantify. The song, I think the songs are enjoyable, at least. I think the movie is well-structured and well-paced. I think at the end of the day, the characters are better defined. And you said that the Mouseguitz family disappears, which they do. But the better voice actors show up more and more. So I think that's a win. Anyway, I think it's worth your time. I think all of us would agree it's at least worth watching.
Maybe once.
Yeah,
I'll give you that.
Or you can, you know, if you're an adult that likes themselves, you can go watch Once Upon a Time in the West.
Fair enough. So next week is a cartoon week, a TV show week, a cartoon TV show week, as far as that goes. But the week after, in the Me Too movement, this guy is a slime bucket. So we're going to go under the sea with an asshole. So stay tuned next week and every future week as we put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Is the girl you left behind out there tonight relaxing? Making eyes at someone else and singing, is she dancing?
I'm back, Mouse. You wouldn't want me to miss my dinner, would you?
Puts the teardrops in your eyes from secret cheese keeping.
I'm blind,
I Hope You Tender Childhood is a member of the ESO Network and produced by Do Better Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman. It is edited by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. The theme song is Caroline by The Serenaders, and their music is available on Amazon. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. And tune in next week when we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.